These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand, welcome to Tuesday afternoon on the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Najarian from CNBC is just wrapping up his work on the halftime report, and we expect him to be on a phone line with us in just a couple of minutes or so to take a look at what's going on Wall Street. A little bit later in the program, well, you tell me, Eric, because things are kind of in a state of flux right now, right? We're waiting for...
We're waiting for the superintendent as well as the mayor. We are told that they are going to be giving a joint statement. Right now, they're at a police academy graduation. That's where we were told, actually, that the superintendent, Eddie Johnson, learned that the charges against Jesse Smollett had been dropped.
Now, you were doing some reporting on this early on, and we're told that the police department was not given a heads up on this, which I got to believe is very unlikely or unusual in such a high-profile case, and in a case where the police superintendent was clearly so personally involved or connected.
Yeah, he was out in front of the press and went through, and this was unusual because we usually don't get this much information, especially from the superintendent, about any case, especially one that has not already been charged. But in the case against Jesse Smollett, he laid out what detectives have, what they reported to him, a timeline of events of the two brothers that that allegedly attacked Jesse Smollett and used racial slurs and homophobic slurs as well when the attack occurred. And they tracked them from their house all the way downtown to where Jesse had said the attack had happened. And the superintendent was out on national television. That this just wasn't a Chicago story here, coming out about saying how bad it made Chicago look.
Well, it was not just about Chicago. It was, I think it was a little personal in that, you know, the superintendent obviously is an African-American man. And, you know, he said for another African-American man to use race to and lies about that to try to further his career. I don't think I'm putting words in his mouth.
No, not at all.
Was sort of personally offensive. So, you know, clearly a personal connection to this. And for the state's attorney's office not to even give them a heads up, it's just one of the other very unusual parts of this case.
This case has been unusual since it broke back in January, right, to say the least. I mean, information was leaking from all different directions in this case. There was a sense, there was a sense in almost the community that, hey, we're behind you. And then all of a sudden, some of these facts started to come out. And then everybody was like, wait a second, let's take a closer look at this. And then you got the Chicago Police Department. There are two internal investigations now in the department.
So what is
the leaks?
So do you think that might be what this is about, that the prosecutors felt that something was leaked inappropriately or in a way that damaged the case, and that's why this has come about this way?
Police are saying that their evidence is rock solid. They're not backing down at all. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see Eddie Johnson's response to this, because this was personal to him. You'll remember at that press conference, and excuse my language here, but he came out when I asked about it, how does this make you feel? He said, I'm pissed. I'm pissed about this.
He said that today?
He didn't say that today. That's okay. What he said back when he was given the timeline of events and came out and said that the reason why Jesse Smollett had done this was to get a raise on the show Empire.
Right. And have we heard from him today at all? I know he's going to speak publicly, but is any reporting from him?
The Sun-Times has reported that the department is furious. I had some sources that were telling me that quote, sickening and beyond furious is what I heard from some of my sources, too. Another, and this is a source that I've had for years, and he's been with the department for 20 years, said he's never in his career seen anything like this. We heard the attorney that we use a lot on WGN TV, Terry Sullivan, he came out and said he's never heard of this. And I mean, he's been around 26 in California for decades.
Right. On the right side of it, not on the bad side of it.
Right. And it's just, there is a lot of questions here. I don't know how Kim Fox doesn't come out at some point and give a press conference. I mean, I think she has to, because
even though she was recused,
herself, or even her top prosecutor, right, that, or the one that made this decision, somebody's got to come out and answer some of these questions, because this was such a public case. Well, that there are so many people that want a resolution one way or the other. We need to know.
There are two things that strike me. One is that the police department and the state's attorney's office are supposed to be on the same side. You know, they are two players on the same team. And this could cause a huge rift there if the police think the prosecutors no longer have their back. I would imagine, you do more reporting in this than I do, that there's always a little friction, you know, that they always think one side could be doing more than they are. But by and large, they're wearing the same jerseys. This could be a real fracture there. Agree or disagree?
No, I agree. The sources that I have in the department, they didn't like Kim Fox from the beginning. They don't think she's an effective prosecutor. They don't like her in that position. They don't think that she has the department's back. And you'll remember when she was running for state's attorney, part of her platform was that, you know, she would recuse herself from police-involved shootings and things like that. If I'm not mistaken, but that's been a sense from the department ever since she got into office that she didn't have their backs.
The other thing then is we don't know, because they're telling us that the charges were dropped. Okay, I'll accept that the defense attorney says the charges are dropped. Prosecutors say that it was resolved in a proper way, I think is their terminology.
Correct.
In some way. So, but Jesse Smollett still comes out of this having given the government a $10,000 fine, if you will. He sacrificed the $10,000 bond that you put up. Now, if I get called into court for purse snatching and I post $10,000 bond and they found out I'm not the guy, I get my $10,000 back.
Yeah, all that is doing is securing that you will come back to court. That's all bond is for.
And so for him to agree to forfeit that implies that there was some sort of agreement here it's a form of punishment in some way. So it's not as if the charges were dropped altogether. He is, in a way, agreeing to some form of punishment, which just hasn't been explained yet.
Yeah, I don't know how else. I don't know how
well,
else.
You,
I mean, you put it perfectly. Yeah. I don't know how to follow that up, Steve.
It doesn't make sense. It's all stuff that can be explained, and perhaps by the end of the day, it will be. But right now, boy, oh boy, oh boy, there are a lot of questions.
That's right.
Go get some answers, Eric. We'll check in with you again around 12:30 or earlier if the police news conference begins. I appreciate your help here.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, on the phone line now is Yannick Lavitz, who is the CEO and co-founder of Luggage Hero, which maybe you haven't heard of yet, but you will soon. It's coming to Chicago. Yannick, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Yes, thank you very much, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. Where do I find you today? Are you at home in Denmark or are you in the States?
Yes, I'm in Denmark, for sure. It's getting evening time here.
I lead group tours, and we took a group to Copenhagen last summer. A beautiful city. Just loved it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I saw some video content on your site. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, we had a great time. The thing with us, though, is we were staying in hotels, so when it was time for us to check out, we took our bags with us and we left. And a lot of times, if you're at an Airbnb, and then if we had to leave our luggage, the hotels generally would store it. But if you're an Airbnb user and you have to check out of the Airbnb, your flight isn't for 6-7 hours, you're kind of stuck lugging your luggage around. And that's an experience you ran into, and you've come up with a fix.
You're absolutely right. Yes, this is very much for the Airbnb crowd out there. I mean, I've had that experience a lot of times, even staying with friends or family or couch surfing or even Airbnb. And it was actually an Airbnb experience in Barcelona who got me into the idea of actually just storing my bag in a shop would be an excellent idea to get rid of it and go out and sightseeing.
So what
just like staying in a hotel.
Right. So for the business that you've created, then you just come up, you identify different shops in the city. They agree to store people's bags for a price. The people, when their time to go get their flight, they go back to that shop, whether it's a coffee shop or a sporting goods store or whatever, pick up their bags, pay their price, and head out to the airport.
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. And actually, hotels and hostels have also joined Luggage Hero.
Ah.
So we have approximately 500 Luggage Hero locations around Europe and U.S., where some of them are even hotels. Oh, they're doing great.
And, you know, that actually makes perfect sense for a hotel, doesn't it? A way to pick up money. They're already kind of doing it for their patrons, their guests. Why not do it for other people?
Exactly, and also just gain all the foot traffic from these people coming in. I think that a lot of hotels have actually come to the conclusion that people are not only staying in Airbnbs, they're also staying in hotels when it suits them.
Sure.
So it's a great way to actually having people seeing your venue.
All right, it's called the Luggage Hero, and you're not in Chicago yet, but you're opening up or you're starting up next month?
Exactly. So we are opening up. We have actually signed the first shops in Chicago, but we're waiting for the big launch in April, in the end of April, which we're aiming for.
Okay, yeah. So how will it work? Let me ask you this, because I guess if people are listening in Chicago, they might not have as much need for it. So where else is it available in the U.S.? Is it available in New York, San Francisco, or what are your plans there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we launched in New York a year ago, and we have approximately 140 locations around New York City and Manhattan. And besides that, we have locations in Barcelona, London, Madrid, Lisbon, Copenhagen, and opening up a lot of new locations during this year, to be exact, actually 36 new destinations.
I would suppose if you do have an Airbnb in Chicago, though, this would be good to know to refer your guests to in the future.
For sure, and that's what our experience is telling us, that is a really good hosting thing to actually recommend a service like ours,
right,
instead of just saying, sorry, I can't help you out.
You can't leave your luggage on my porch. How many businesses?
Yeah.
How many are you signing up in Chicago? How many spots will there be?
So when we launch Chicago, there will be approximately 50 locations. So it's just a really good starting number to cover Chicago well. So we bring that convenience to the travelers, so they don't have to go far to actually be able to store their things.
What are you looking for spots? I mean, it's got to be somewhere probably near public transportation or near walking areas, right? It's not going to do you any good in a suburb where there aren't going to be people going to spend their day walking around seeing the sights.
No, you're right about that. I mean, we are really looking for the good spots in the city, and those are near the traffic hubs and so on. And I mean, any public transportation is really good in hand when you store your luggage near it. Yeah.
Luggage Hero, there's no space between those words. And check it out if you're traveling or if you're hosting as well. Yannick Levitz, it was great to talk to you. Thanks for taking time for us. And next time I'm in Copenhagen, I'll look for you. It's 12:54. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Little disjointed today. A lot of things going on in many different directions. We've been to, well, the heart of Chicago, to Denmark, to England, and now to the podcast of getting to Yes And, hosted by Kelly Leonard. Kelly comes by every other Tuesday or so, and this week's guest is Lydia Slaby.
Yeah.
Who she's written a memoir about overcoming or enduring.
So Lydia was this sort of like very well educated, high priced, high moving attorney in Chicago. She's married to Michael Slaby, who was Obama's chief technology officer in the campaign and someone I had on the podcast. So these are friends of mine. And
mm-hmm.
Lydia got diagnosed with cancer. And this is her memoir of both her life, her relationship with Michael, and this cancer journey.
You laugh because her relationship with Michael it's been rough. I mean,
yeah,
she writes pretty bluntly about
these are friends of mine. I'm like, wow, I didn't know all this stuff.
Not
yeah, no, they
to
broke up
this?
For a long
yeah.
period of time. But, you know, she is someone who kind of had it all and was a control freak. And the thing that she recognized through the cancer journey was that she had to cede control. And I think what she kind of says, you know, and of course my daughter Nora is going through this
right.
as well, is that, you know, she found a lot of positivity out of this experience.
There's a thing where she talks about ceding control, but controlling her mindset.
Right.
So there are things you can control.
Totally.
And part of that is understanding what you can't.
Yeah. So, you know, ceding control to the experts to take care of her physical treatment, but recognizing that the mindset that she brings with her into the room and during this entire process is just as important. So this idea of, like, we talked a lot about we shared our mutual experiences that mistakes happen in medical settings. And the more you can go in without a blame mindset, but a more positive mindset to make fixes for the future, you're going to be better
Interesting,
off.
Interesting, right? Rather than saying the doctors screwed up this way or that way.
Yeah.
You also say, and this is something your daughter shares with her,
yeah,
that there's an odd comfort about being in the hospital.
Yeah, she said her dirty little secret is that sometimes she wishes she was back in the hospital. So when I got home after the interview and Nora asked me how it was, I go, this is what she said. And Nora immediately goes, totally get that.
Really?
And both of them said the same thing, which is like, the thing when you're in the hospital is you know what your job is as a patient. And
you're
other people are there.
Control.
Yeah. But you know that they're kind of taking care and doing their work. And when you're out of the hospital, that's a little more blurry.
Yeah. The name of the podcast is Getting to Yes, and Kelly Leonard is the host. And you know, we're thinking of Nora each and every day.
Yep. Thanks so much.